This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by our friends at MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. As soon as we decided to go to the Tower of Terror 10-miler, the first people we called were MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. Why? Because we wanted the confidence that our vacation plans would be handled by experts. They go out of their way to do a great job and ensure that our vacation goes well. Please contact them by clicking on the link on the Mickey Miles Podcast website or by going to MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 104 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show, as always, is Michelle Scribner-McLean. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm doing great. It's fall is here, and even though I'm a big summer worshiper, I'm actually really enjoying running in the fall weather. Here in New Hampshire, we have the day starts at about 45 and ends and 45 degrees, and then ends at about 75 degrees. So a big switch in temperatures, but loving it. So how are you liking running in this, Mike?
So far, so good. Actually, it's been a very, very warm summer. So anytime the temperature starts dropping in the fall, it's really welcomed, as long as it doesn't get too cold.
And can you feel the buzz of people getting excited about the Tower of Terror 10-miler?
Yeah, I think that there is always a buzz when you get within a month of a Run Disney race. And I think a lot of people are curious to see what's going to happen this year, if there are going to be any changes, any tweaks. We all know that what happens when the second rendition of an inaugural race comes through, there's always some improvements, and we're looking forward to seeing what those are.
Okay, you ready for the shout-out?
Of course.
Okay. The shout-out is to somebody who posted on our Facebook page again. His name is Matt Birchfield, and I'm so, so happy to report that he successfully completed his first 5K. So it wasn't a Disney 5K, but it was a 5K, and it's always exciting when people start down this road because it's not too long before you're collecting those medals and seeing lots of people you know at races. So congratulations, Matt.
Way to go, Matt. Way to go. Well, today's show is a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and we're going to call it a grab bag show, because what we're going to do is we're going to attack some of the questions that we have been receiving, and we're also going to report on a few things, and we hope that it's going to be a little bit different kind of a show, and we hope that you enjoy it. So, Michelle, would you like to do the questions first, or do you want to do the other part of the show?
How about we do the other part of the show, because I think you and I both have things that we wanted to share that didn't necessarily fit into a whole show, but we thought were worthwhile things to share. And, Mike, do you want to start with well, your thing is kind of interesting because it kind of started from talking to Jeff Galloway. Do you want to tell people?
Sure. So about a month ago, or within the last month, I should say, I don't remember exactly when, we did a show in which we talked about training versus just running. And that show was my idea because during my rehab in dealing with my orthopedic surgeon, we talked about training versus running. And he said, you know, Mike, you can run, get back into shape, whatever, but try to hold off training until sometime around September when you are pretty much, you know, almost 100%. So we talked about training, and I started to train this past week. And we had Jeff on last week, and we talked a lot about dealing with nighttime races. And Jeff mentioned how he was trying to qualify for the Boston Marathon, and he was going to work an interval training method where he would – run 30 seconds and walk 15 seconds. Well, this week pretty much was the start of my training week. And for the first two times I've gone out to run, I've tried this. And in both cases, I have come up with two of my top 10 miles this year in terms of speed. And I want to report, Michelle, that I think that this 30-second, 15-second run-walk-run ratio, that might be something that I might be using from now on. I will be testing it on my next training run. I've just done it on short runs. I'm going to try it on a somewhat longer run my next time out, and I'm hoping that it's going to be really productive.
So I'm wondering why you thought, well, what was your interval before, and why did you decide that this might be a good idea?
Well, my intervals were all over the place. Normally,
I know that, but I don't know. Yeah. Listeners
well,
know that.
For instance, being a progressive runner and someone who loves to do negative splits, I would start off possibly with I would do maybe a 30-15, and then I would add 15 seconds, and I would constantly try to maintain a 2-1 ratio up to the point where, so I would do like 2 minutes running, 1 minute walking, and then I would go 2 minutes and 15 seconds running, 1 minute walking. So I would gradually be running more but walking the same. That really didn't do much for me, and I would be tired. What this 30-second, 15-second thing does for me, Michelle, and you and I have talked about this many times, that a lot of us who have been running for a long time find ourselves not really warmed up until you're in maybe mile 3, 4, 5, or maybe even 6. And when you do a run, walk, run kind of a thing, with me it was like starting all over again, and my body could never get into a cadence, could never get into auto mode or whatever. But with 30 and 15, it seems like I'm really running all the time. And to me, that appeals to me very much. I'm not running all the time. I'm taking walk breaks, but it feels like I'm running all the time, and my body really likes it because it gets into a rhythm. And I have noticed that my final mile has been almost as much as a minute faster than my first mile. So I'm going to stick with it for a while and see how it works.
Mike, would you say that, I think it sounds great. I think it's a good idea. Would you say that universally that's what everybody should be doing? Or do you think it should be on a case-by-case basis? Because I know you've experimented with things a lot.
I think it's an individual kind of a thing, Michelle. And I think that's what training's all about. I think training is when you try to discover what's best for you as an individual runner. Not everybody runs the same. About 5 or 6 years ago, I wrote a blog that talked about the different kinds of runners that are out there. I talked about people who start off fast. I talked about people who are consistent. And I talked about people who get stronger as they run. And I think everybody has to determine what kind of a runner they are. And once they know what kind of a runner they are, then they can determine what kind of an interval works for them. And I think that we have to go back to Jeff's goals, that you need to run so that you feel very good at the end. You need to make sure that when you cross that finish line, you're not injured and you feel and you're running across upright. So I think for everybody, it's different. I think everybody should try different ways before they settle in. But at a certain point, within a month of a race, you should have an idea of what works for you.
I think it's very interesting. You know, I've been, as everybody knows, because I've been talking about this, I've been doing this e-training with Jeff Galloway, and just following the shorter intervals that he's having me do. Today I did my magic mile, and I think I did it even 30 seconds faster than my miles on Reach the Beach last week. So, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. Well, I think you should keep us up to date on what happens. And are you going to use this for Tower of Terror?
I have several weeks to figure that out. I will. My plan is to try this on a 10-mile run and see maybe if it works as well as I want it to work. Last year, I ran the Tower of Terror I was injured, and I ran. I don't know if you remember that night.
Yeah, that was your kind of your last Disney race for a while.
Yeah, sort of my last Disney race, and I remember everybody on our team was looking for me at the end, and especially you. And I ran that night, but I was really hurting at the end. I don't know if you remember. I also had some issues with my toenails that night in my shoe. So I'm looking forward to. I know that I'll do a PR on that particular race and that particular course this year, but I want to use it as a training run as well for Wine and Dine and for the January races. So yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that for that race.
You said something really important, and I just want to underscore this because I actually was thinking of a podcast that I listened today, an interview with Billie Jean King, and interviewer was asking her how she stayed so calm under stressful situations, because often she was in a tennis match where she, you know, was on the brink of losing. And she said that she pretty much said it's all about the training, and it's all about mentally putting yourself in a place where you can visualize what's going to happen. She said it's not just what's going to happen if you're deuce and you're about to lose the whole tournament, but what's going to happen if you're not feeling well. What's going to happen if it's rainy and there's a delay? What's going to happen if it's too windy like it was at the U.S. Open? And so I think what we need to underscore here is that training piece, you know, the day-to-day getting out there really is the most important part. That's the most important part of really coming to the start, because the Tower of Terror could be warm again this year. And so if you're keeping up with your training and trying different things like you are, you're more equipped to handle those different situations. You're not visualizing it, but kind of practicing every scenario that might be possible before you get there. So when it happens and things might not be the way they want, you're in good shape.
You're right, Michelle. It's almost as if we are coaching ourselves, and a good coach, and I've coached for a long time in different sports, and what I always try to do is try to get my teams used to dealing with certain situations. And if you train and you think about how you would react depending upon what's going on, then when that actually happens, you've been there before, so you know what to how to handle it, how to approach it. And if you don't have that stress, then you're going to be successful. And I think that, you know, we continue every time all of us goes out there on a training run, we're coaching ourselves.
Great. Well, we want to hear what happens. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. I will report on maybe the next show. We'll see.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about a few things. The first thing I wanted to talk about is that I know you'll remember you weren't on this show, but the Running Gear for Women show. I got a lot of great feedback on that. A lot of people listened to that show. One group of people who listened were the folks at Skirt Sports. And we talked about how much we like their stuff. And they were kind enough to send me a skirt sport. One of the ones that Helen Dunn had mentioned was the Happy Girl skirt. And so it was like Christmas for runners this week. I had a package waiting at my door, which is great. So Chris over there sent me a skirt, and I tried it today, and it's the Happy Girl skirt, and it is absolutely fantastic. It is a little bit longer than the other skirts. It has I know I was talking – Mike and I were actually talking girl clothes earlier today. I was telling you that it has spots for gels on both legs and just a really comfortable skirt for the fall. So that's what I'm going to be wearing to the Tower Terror 10 miler. I just wanted to give a very brief review, but I like it very much.
So here I am. I am a co-host on two podcasts, very popular podcasts, and you and Hotchberg get all the stuff. And I don't get anything.
You know,
and
Mike,
never got anything.
If you wanted, they also sent me a bra. I haven't talked about that. I won't talk about that today, but if you want a skirt, you know, I'm sure that they would send you maybe a, you know, Italian, colors of the Italian flag skirt or something. Who knows? We can ask them. But if you tried this skirt, you would like it. It's the Happy Girl skirt. It would have to be Happy Boy.
I don't know if they would have my size.
The other thing I wanted to mention was Mike, you may have heard that I'm a tech junkie.
Oh, yeah.
There's been some Apple stuff released this week. One of the things that was released for everybody, or people with the latest models of the iPhone, was the new iOS 7. And so one of the things that you have the ability to do now is to add radio stations. So you can run with a radio, you can, you know, decide which artist or what genre you want to run with, and you can actually run with your phone on a radio station. So I'd like to hear if people have some good stations they're listening to for running. I know a lot of people do run with their iPhones, so I wanted to mention that. Did you try it?
No, but I do listen to The River out of Gainesville. Is it Gainesville, Georgia, when I go on my running, my training runs? And maybe I'll give the iTunes radio. Is it iTunes radio, Michelle?
Yeah, you go into iTunes, and then there's a radio button. You can add your own radio stations. And the cool part is that you can add them on your computer, and it syncs to your iPhone and vice versa, or on your tablet. I don't think most people are going to be running with their tablet, but...
Maybe I'll give him a shot.
Okay. So you want to – well, actually, I want to talk about just a few more things before we jump into some questions. Mike, I don't know what it is. I know you are an expert podcaster. Maybe I'm starting to get the hang of this podcasting thing. But I just wanted to let everybody out there know that we're actually booking our shows, planning our shows now through the end of October. And we have some pretty exciting guests coming on. We have Disney authors. We have we have some people have really interesting websites. We have Diet Diva Tara coming on. It's going to be answering questions about fueling and hydration during races. So I'm really excited, and we're getting organized. So keep those questions coming. If you have questions that you want us to ask, we'll let you know who the other exciting guests are very soon. But
I also want to throw out one tease, and we're keeping our fingers crossed, but we are working on something very, very special that we may be able to pull off for Wine and Dine or for the January races. We don't know if we can do it. We're going to try to do it, and if we do it, it'll be the first time any podcast has ever done this, and that includes WDW today. So
are we gonna jump over a lake with a motorcycle or something?
Well, let's just like I said, we're keeping our fingers crossed. It involves dealing with two other parties that we're talking to, and I just wanted to let everybody know, let our listeners know that we're trying to do whatever we can to bring our running community together, and hopefully something really exciting may be coming down the pipe. And if so, we will definitely be announcing it on the show. Probably we'll know sometime within the next couple of weeks if we'll be able to do something really special. But just wanted to throw a tease out there.
Well, this very much is a grab bag show. One more thing before we go to questions. A reminder that our Tower of Terror race weekend meet is going to be Sunday, October 6th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's going to be at the Disney Beach Club Solarium. So you can go to our Mickey Miles Podcast Facebook page if you want to RSVP, or just show up. Looks like it's going to be a small, intimate group, but it'll be inside, it'll be cool, and we can wear your medal, and we'll be taking pictures, and if you want, you can do a show opening for us.
Yeah, I think the 10-miler, Michelle, was originally designed. I remember talking with Akeisha Christensen on this when she used to work in the East Coast Run Disney group. And Akeisha said that what it was to be was a bridge supposed to help those people who are training for things like the Wine and Dine Half Marathon and the January races. So I think with that in mind, I don't expect a big field for this race, and with that, you know, we would expect there would be far less people at one of our meets than there would be if there was a half marathon. So just keep that in mind.
Well, whoever comes will be happy to say hello.
Oh yeah,
and I know a lot of people who have been on the show are actually going to be there. Eddie McCoy, if you want to meet him, Liz Driscoll, one of our people who's on our Princess shows, and one of my favorite science buddies, Robert Sparks, will be there. David Koch will be there. So, yeah, sounds like a good group. Are we ready to question? Answer those questions?
You may start when ready, Grizzly.
Okay, Grizzly? Why am I Grizzly?
I don't know. Isn't that fire when ready, Grizzly?
I don't know. Okay, this question is from Nadia Morales, and she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle, love the podcast. I've been listening to you guys since the beginning of it. I will be running the Glass Slipper Challenge in February, and I wanted to know which hotel you recommend we stay at that weekend. Also, my husband will be cheering for me, and we were wondering if paying for the cheer squad is worth it. If it is not, or what are the best places to see me during the race if he's not paying?" And so Nadia is from Alexandria, Virginia. What do you think, Mike?
I remember, Michelle, when we were at the Disney Dumbo Double Dare, we were walking to the race start on that race morning. And remember, we passed by where the finish line was, and they had all these special chairs set up. And I guess that was for the cheer squad. In Walt Disney World, there is a sort of a grandstand where those people who are on the cheer squad are allowed to go onto to cheer for their runners. The only thing with that is that if Nadia, your husband did the cheer squad thing, my guess is that he would be on the on that grandstand for the majority of the race. When I was on the shelf and I wanted to check out everyone who was running in the race that I knew, including Michelle, for the princess, I spent my time running around. Michelle, I think I saw you just before you entered the TTC area, and then I saw you again at the Grand Floridian. And for the marathon, I saw you at Studios, and then I saw you finish. And that meant that I had to run around and do this and do that. But you know, that made the time go by fast. The time that I spent traveling from point to point just made the day very interesting and very exciting for me. And be it a full marathon or a half marathon, I think I enjoyed that more than if I would be just sitting at the race finish waiting for you to finish. And I did see you finish. So I think the answer that I'm working towards, Nadia, is that I don't know if I would do the chair squad. I think I would just run around trying to see my friends. And I think that worked out better for me anyways.
So I would agree with you, and a few things I want to say. First of all, I don't think I've ever met anybody who's actually done the cheer squad. I don't think that you have, Mike, either. I don't know. We don't need to because we have a lot of people, a lot of our friends are really experts at doing kind of figuring out where to go. I'm going to point you towards two resources. The first one is we previously did a show about spectating for Disney races with Dave Allen. And Dave Allen is he's the go-to person for doing things like this. Dave is a runner himself, but he finds himself more often watching his dynamo runner of her wife, Holly Allen, who's been on the show also, do her races both at Disney and all around the world. He has a great new Facebook page called Race Chase, Expert Advice About Seeing Your Runner on Race Day. I'm sure if you post specific questions, he can help you. Also, he has a digital book available that's called Race Chase, so I'd recommend that. He did a show with us previously. I don't know what episode it is. Maybe our wonderful our guy who does the show notes, Rich, will help us out. But that's I actually don't really know anybody who's done it. I know you get a T-shirt. I know you get a specialized viewing area. If you feel comfortable running around Disney World on your own and you're familiar with it, I'd recommend doing what Mike said and also posting a question on Dave's page.
One more thing, Michelle. Nadia wanted to say, she asked if it was not worth it, what are the best places for him to see her during the race. And I just want to go over them just quickly one more time in case he or anyone else would like to know. Number one, there is a place just before the runners enter the they go down that incline that goes underneath that underneath that bridge where the trams go for the TTC area.
There's a metal Mickey there, like a cutout metal Mickey on the right.
About 100 yards prior to that, when the runners take a left turn and they're running right near underneath the monorail. That would be the first place I would go. The second place I would go is either near the Polynesian Resort, and there would be signs, or near the wedding pavilion for the Grand Floridian. That would be the second place I would go to. And then the third place is, again, this is for a half marathon. The third place would be the finish line. But you have to move fast, and you have to understand where you're going and make plans so that as soon as your runner goes by, bang, you're moving over to the next spot. So those are the three places that I would recommend.
And even if you don't get to be on the grandstands at the finish line, just prior to that, there's a great place to stand, right? And you can see people coming through. Mike, what about on Main Street, just before you make a turn into Tomorrowland, where we stood last year for the half marathon?
Well, the only issue with Main Street, Michelle, and last year I was trying to figure out where I would see you and all my friends. The problem is that on Main Street, it's the space is premium. You and I, I believe the place that we thought was good was just before you go over these, and I call them spokes to Tomorrowland.
Right.
We were like right in front of that bridge, almost right near where the, I think it's right near where the Rose Garden is. We were there. That would be one good place. The only issue with Main Street is that it's very hard for the runners to see their cheer, the people who are cheering them on. If you go to where I said to go to, where is in the TTC parking lot, it's more likely that your runner will see you, and they will see you on the left side of the course. I must have seen about 20 people who saw me that day, and there weren't that many people there, and they were able to spot me.
I spotted you easily. Yeah. Did you know Nadia had another question and we didn't answer it? Where should she stay?
Where should she stay? Okay. She wanted to know which hotel we recommend. Well, it depends. As long as you stay at a host – if you stay at a host hotel, then you'll have transportation. If you don't stay at a host hotel, then you either have to figure out which hotels are close by that you need to go to, or you drive to the race. If you drive to the race, it really doesn't matter. My guess would be and my suggestion would be – for this particular race, any of the Epcot Resort hotels would work, and they range from value to deluxe.
So we stay Beach Club often. Boardwalk is a good one. What about Polynesian or anything on the monorail?
Well, yeah, I mean you could do that if you really are interested in staying at the Polynesian. There's no problem there. Caribbean, Coronado, All Star, Art of Animation, Pop Century, those would be the others that I would suggest.
But with a car.
With a car,
yes. I don't think it matters as long as you have a car. So, Nadia, give us some more information if you're going to have a car or not. We can help narrow it down. Ready for the next question, Michael?
The next question comes from our buddy Pamela Potter Frost. And I'll paraphrase what she asked. She wanted to know if the Tara Terra 10-miler would be an easy race to get to if she drove to the start or finish area. And if she did do that, would she have to pay for parking? Now, when I saw this question, I thought about, making sure that we gave her the right answer. So, Michelle,
as opposed to the other questions,
most of the time we're pretty good.
Yeah, this is a tricky one because this race is a little different.
Right. So what I did is I pulled up the final race instructions, which I received in my email. And if you would be so kind, would you let me read these? And this is exactly what Run Disney is telling us. They are saying that race transportation is only provided to and from the host resorts, and guests not staying at a host resort will need to provide their own transportation to ESPN Wild World of Sports Complex for all events. It goes on to say, for guests driving personal vehicles or traveling by taxi to ESPN Wild World of Sports on race evening, the race shuttles from ESPN Wild World of Sports to Disney's Hollywood Studios will begin at 7 p.m. There will be no parking and no guest drop-off at Disney's Hollywood Studios on race evening. Parking is free. That answers one of our questions. Parking is free at ESPN Wild World of Sports for participants and spectators. All participants must board shuttles from ESPN Wild World of Sports to Disney's Hollywood Studios no later than 8 p.m. in order to make it to the corrals by 9:15 p.m. So, Pamela, it's free, free parking, but you'd have to go to the ESPN World of Sports to park there, and then after the race you would take a shuttle, a bus shuttle, back to World of Sports to get your car. Michelle?
Well, you know, I thank you for reading that, and it is kind of complicated, but I want to tell Pamela that even though it sounds like a lot of directions and it sounds complicated, it actually goes pretty smoothly. We've done it before. So as long as you are not one of these people who waits till the last minute, if you give yourself plenty of time, you're going to have Disney sets it up so that you have plenty of time to get where you need to go as long as you follow these directions. Don't procrastinate. I don't think you would anyway, but Mike, you and I have seen many people who are running in at the last minute, and you don't want to spend that much money for a race and then not get there. The other thing too about this particular race is I think because you're waiting ahead of time at night, there's a lot more socialization going on. It's kind of comfortable weather. You know, people are, you know, dancing and walking around. It's not like in January where it can be a little cold sometimes. So there's no reason not to get there early.
You know, if you stay at beach or yacht club or the Swan or the Dolphin or Boardwalk, excuse me, you can actually walk to the start if you don't mind walking along the Boardwalk to the Hollywood Studios parking lot. But that's another thing that that's another option, depending upon if you're staying at one of those resorts. All right, Michelle, next question.
All right, the next question is from Amanda Hootman, and she says, hello again, Mike and Michelle. Lots of questions. First, on what property hotels are the most convenient to stay the night before a race? So we had that question already. It depends on if you have a car, how much you want to pay, which race it is. Next, race amenities. How long can one expect to queue for a toilet / picture with a character / drink during a race? I'm worried that I'll be so distracted by all the necessary wonderful things at the side of the track that I'll be super slow and get picked up by the grim sweepers. Should we answer that, Mike, before we go on?
Sure. Do you want to go first?
Well, I'll talk about the bathrooms because I'm really good at those.
Go ahead.
So the bathrooms, I'm going to say this because I actually had a lot of conversations about this when I did the Reach to Beach, where I used more porta potties in 30 hours than I ever had in my life. If you're like me, your stomach's going to get a little funny just before the race. At most Disney events, you'll wait about 5 to 10 minutes at a bathroom. There are hundreds of bathrooms, but there are thousands of runners. If I need to go and I can wait and I'm not worried about time, I wait until I start the race and then go a mile in and usually find some bathrooms, or there'll be bathrooms on the way to the corrals. But when you start racing and you know you're at mile 5 or 6, wherever they end up, you won't wait very long for a bathroom. Mike, do you want to talk about characters?
Okay. If we are talking, I believe we are not talking any specific race, are we, Michelle, or are we just talking?
Just characters in general.
Okay. Every character has a different set of fan base, and depending upon which character you're coming across, the line could be somewhat long, very long, or I think I'll pass it up long. I don't know.
Although that doesn't happen too often that there's a I think I'll pass it up character.
Yeah, see, I think that it depends upon the character. If you happen to come across this character in the parks and you take a photo with this character, then why would you want to take it when you're racing? I say if it's one of your special characters, maybe before the race you say to yourself, I'm going to stop only if so-and-so is out. Then you are going to probably be okay. If you stop for every character, and I know that a lot of people do, then that's fine too. I guess it depends upon what you want out of the race. I never stop for any characters because I'm trying to run the race, but you know, you want to enjoy yourself, so I say do the best job you can.
So like in terms of time, it could be anywhere from 5 minutes to, I know when we were in Disneyland, we saw a huge queue for Darth Vader. So, you know, I often run by and I estimate if it takes each person 30 seconds to take a picture and there are 60 people in line, that's a 30-minute wait. So You have to decide. You kind of have to decide if it's going to be a race for time, what corral you're in. If you're starting in corral H, you might have a different thought about it versus if you're starting in corral C, right?
Well, the other thing is that it depends upon the race, Michelle. When you are running, if you are running the half marathon in January, you will come across characters in the Magic Kingdom, and that's it. And you'll come across those characters maybe in Tomorrowland, maybe in Fantasyland, and that'll be it, really. And maybe a little bit when you get to behind the scenes as you go past Space Mountain. When you go past Splash Mountain, there may be something off stage, and that would be it. So for the half marathon, you know, that may not be too bad. If you're doing the full, that's a different story because you're going through other parks. For the Princess half marathon, there are character photo op temptations on World Drive. So those are special occasions. But, you know, whatever's most important, and the whole idea is to have fun. So I wouldn't worry.
Yeah, and you'll find that there'll be cast members there to take the pictures with you. So you'll be all set. And they know how to use all versions of different phones, too. Her last question is, this is very interesting, that we've never been asked this one before. I live in a very busy area, and I frequently have to stop for cars at stoplights and crosswalks while out during my training runs. This has concerned me for some time. Am I right in being concerned? Is this stopping and starting messing with my endurance, even though it's only for a few seconds to a minute at a time? Should I do an occasional run on a treadmill or a track? Or is it similar to what I will experience at the Walt Disney World Marathon? See you in January. That's a great question.
When people decide to do long distance running, I think that they need to realize that half of it is mental and half of it is physical. And I think this is the mental aspect that I think Amanda is talking about. I don't think it's going to impact your endurance, Amanda. I think you're going to be fine. Think about the people who do run, walk, run. Think about the people who have to stop for a bio break. Think about people who stop for drinks. Think about people who are stopping to check things out. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think that you just need to think about the distance that you're running and not worry about the stopping. Michelle?
Well, you know, the Garmins that we have an auto pause feature, and it accounts for when you stop moving for even 5 seconds. They must have put it in there because they know a lot of people deal with this issue, so I wouldn't worry about it either. What I do when I have to stop, and I did have to stop today, as you probably know, I run on a rail trail. It has a few little areas where you have to cross the street. I just, you know, keep jogging in place. I think if you keep jogging in place, you'll be doing pretty much the same thing, and you'll be fine. I wouldn't go ahead and do any extra runs for that reason. Do we have time for one more, Mike?
Our next question comes from Marcelina Rodriguez West, and basically Marcelina wants to know if she should wear her magic band during the Tower of Terror 10-miler, or if she should put it in bag check. What would you do, Michelle, if you had that option, if you had the magic band, would you wear it during the race, or would you put it into bag check?
So Marcelina, isn't that where Walt Disney was born? I think this is a great question. I think it's interesting because I think we've yet to see how Run Disney might capitalize on the fact that runners would be using their magic bands. If she doesn't bring it with her, of course she's not going to be able to get back in her room because that's her room key. But I would love to see them using magic bands at the photo opportunities and to be able to, you know, buy things after the race and things like that. I think if you want to, you can put it in your bag until the race is over. I don't, you know, I've seen them. I actually haven't worn them myself. I don't think it's going to be a big deal to wear it. It seems pretty light. If it were me, I probably would just wear it and not worry about it. Mike, what do you think?
I would wear it only if I had reason to wear it. And that would be, for instance, if you are going to stay after at the party and you want to make a purchase for drinks and food, then, and if your credit card information is on that magic band, then by all means. Also, if you have the magic band excuse me, that means you don't have to carry your room key, because when you go back to your room, you just wave it and you'll be able to get into your room. So again, if you have, if it's something that you don't mind on your wrist, and by all means, I would use it.
Well, you wouldn't have a room key, right? Because the magic band is your room key.
Exactly.
Here's what I was thinking, though. Wouldn't it be cool if, I don't know if they could ever do this, but wouldn't it be cool if you could wear your magic band to the expo and anything that you wanted to buy, you could just use your magic band? I mean, I know all the vendors do their own thing in terms of payment, but wouldn't that be fun? That would probably cost me a lot of money.
Yeah, because the magic band is just like plastic money.
No, you know? But I mean, like, even like if you're doing the wine and dine or some of the after parties, if you wanted to buy something at one of the carts, to not have to have the card with you, I think would be really, really cool. You know, if you want to buy a beer, if you want to buy, you know, something to eat or a dessert, just have that magic band. So that's cool. It's a great question. I think, as I said, I don't think Walt Disney, Run Disney has, not Walt Disney because he can't do this, but Run Disney has not really explored the possibilities of what can be done with this magic band. And I think some cool things will probably be coming our way.
You never know. That was a good question. Michelle, we have a question that I think it's important that we take a look, because a lot of people are asking questions about this, and it involves compression socks and sleeves. And Andrea Orellana has asked us recently about this, and she wants to know if compression socks and sleeves, what they do for runners, and when is the best time to wear them, before, during, and after a race. Now, Michelle, I know that you brought yours to Disneyland, and you wore them, I believe you wore them
during,
and you wore them after the half marathon. Did they help you at all?
Well, I think the jury's still out about the science behind it, what it actually does. But to me, it seems to help me. At least I feel like I'm recovering. My legs feel less tired. I used to wear them just after my long runs. Now I wear them sometimes during my long runs. I know, again, you know, I did this Reach the Beach thing. I wore it between my runs. And it speaks to the idea of, you know, maybe having two pairs of them, because you'll have a sweaty pair and then a not sweaty pair afterwards. I don't have compression sleeves. Is she asking for arm sleeves? Yeah. I did see some people during the last race that I did, you know, in New Hampshire wearing them. I've heard people say that it's nice to keep your arms warm. Some of them actually have gloves in the bottom of, you know, like where your fingers stick out. They cover your hands. And they can be easily peeled off and put into a pocket, or, you know, stuffed into your running skirt or something like that. But I really love – I don't have as many as our buddy Helen Dunn has. I have two pairs of compression socks or sleeves. They're not really socks. They're just the sleeves. And I like them and I use them. What about you, Mike?
Well, I have used them when I have run back-to-back races, like after the – so if we have a race on a Saturday and a race on a Sunday, after the race on Saturday, I will wear them, and I will wear them sleeping, and I will probably wear them on the next day. I think they, at least for me, they feel like they really help. And when I saw this question, I thought, you know, maybe I need to look to see if there is any information out there that indicates whether or not they actually work. And I did find something, Michelle, and if I may, I'd like to just see if I can extract some information and maybe see if we can answer this question. It said that...
Sure.
It says compression socks and wraps have been widely accepted in clinical and post-surgical settings for the treatment of several things: edema, lymph edema, varicose veins, spider veins, all that stuff. And it says that most theories about how the socks can improve running performance focus on the physiological and biomechanical support of the lower extremities. And It talks about all this stuff. One of the things it says, and I think this is what a lot of us have been talking about, is that it's felt that the compression socks enhance what they call venous return to the heart through a more efficient calf muscle pump, leading to increased endurance capacity. Basically, it's a recovery tool that helps your bodies get especially the lower extremities, get the nourishment they require to get back into shape. And it says that there is the notion that muscles are, if the muscles are kept more compact, then the balance is improved and muscle fatigue is minimized. So basically, that's one of the major reasons. And there was also one more study that was done by the American College of Sports Medicine, and it was suggested that people who wore compression socks, there was a difference between those people who wore compression socks and those who did not. There was what they call a faster lactate recovery rate after exercise. So, again, it may help you. It may not help, but I think that it's a tool that a lot of us have tried. And I don't know of anyone that I know of, Michelle, who has worn them, who has said they didn't help at all. So,
I think that's a very good point. I think everybody who we talk to who uses them swears by them. So, The not great part is that they're on the expensive side. The Zenses that we have are $40. I've rarely seen them cost less. I do have somebody told me that you can get them if you go to a medical supply store and you just get compression socks there. You can get cheaper ones. The type people would use for varicose veins and things like that. They're not as styling. You can't get them with the leopard prints, but. But yeah, I think it's fine. It's definitely worth it. For me, I tend to use it if I know that I'm going either if I've done a long run or if I'm doing the multiple day racing. So that's when I use it.
One more thing, Michelle, while we're on this subject, compression socks are a little bit more expensive normally than compression sleeves. But I've talked with some people who have worn compression socks, and they say one of the benefits they get from compression socks is that, especially after they've run a race, is that when they put them on, it does something to their feet. It makes their feet feel better. It's almost like they're getting a massage with the socks. So that's
hug.
Something.
It's a little hug. It's a little hug. And your calves are worth it.
Right. Well, that's about all the time we have for this edition of Questions, Answers.
And grab bag.
grab bag. So, Michelle, any last words before we sign off on show 104?
Do I have last words? I don't really have any last words. I hope that everybody out there has a great run this week, I guess. And even if you're not going to be at Tower of Terror, please follow us on Twitter on Mickey Miles Pod. And we will try to keep you up to date. We're on Instagram, too. And, Mike, and if you are going to be there and you can't make the meet, just follow us. And if you want to come and say hello, if we're anywhere in the park, we'll let you know. And you can come up and say hi. We'd love to see you.
And this episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And with the Tower of Terror looming, you know, everyone gets a little scared, gets a little frightened around Halloween, but we don't get frightened because we know that we're in good hands with MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, and we're looking forward to all our race vacations because they handle everything for us, and we would like to see you also have no worries on your vacations, be it a run Disney vacation or any vacation for that matter. So go visit the Vacation Planners. They're very professional. It's a fee-free agency. Go visit them at MEI Travel, MEI-travel.com, or mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner at MickeyMousePodcast.com. So for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.